Good morning. Today is Wednesday, February the 26th. 1 week and counting. All right. Some of us are counting down. Some of us are counting too. Joining us this morning is Virginia Bass's buddy. How's that? Sarah Vogel.
I'll take it.
All right. Good morning. Are you ready for our... Why do we say that? I'm looking for something that might be kind of in keeping with, but I'm not finding anything in your arena whatsoever. Okay. Make one's mark. Why do we say a person who has achieved success has made his mark in the world?
Oh, that is a good question.
That's kind of a tame one.
I wonder if it has something to do with ancient history and markings and caves, but I really don't know. I'm interested in learning.
At one time, smiths and other artisans had distinctive marks which they placed on their wares, like revere ware.
Sure.
Right? Okay.
Sure.
If the artisan's mark became generally known, he had made his mark in the world. The idea of a person's making his mark, that is, placing his name on the pages of history, is of later origin.
Interesting.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, other than being Virginia's buddy, what you doing here this morning?
Sure. Well, I'm here with Aegis Treatment Centers. We are opening a treatment center in Eureka for individuals who are suffering with opioid addiction. And Virginia has been a supporter, along with other board of supervisors and city council members, because no one is really a stranger to this crisis here in across America, but also here in Humboldt County. For the last several years, we have ranked in the top five for opioid overdose deaths.
Is that is that poundage or just a percentage of the population?
It's a percentage of, you know, per 100,000 people.
Well, let's step back, Sarah, for a sec. What is an opioid? I mean, you kind of hear some of these phrases getting thrown around or terminology thrown around, and everybody kind of starts nodding their head because they're familiar with it, but they may not really truly understand what it is, and nobody likes being stupid, but hey, I don't mind.
Sure, absolutely. And I get that question asked a lot.
We got a bunch of stupid people in Humboldt. All right. Big crowd.
No problem. Well, there's a lot of medications out there, and opioids essentially, when we're discussing opioid use disorder, it is people who are have developed a dependency on painkillers and heroin.
Both? Okay.
Yes.
So heroin is an opioid and painkillers are?
Absolutely.
Same general class of stuff.
They are.
So why is one legal and one illegal, I wonder?
That question has been asked quite a bit and has been the genesis of this crisis. Originally, opioids were primarily used for people who were at the end of their lives suffering from cancer to ease their pain. And so developing an addiction wasn't an issue because there wasn't a long-term future in sight. Eventually, it became more mainstream for doctors to prescribe it. And it was then discovered that this was highly addictive for some people. Not everybody takes opioids and becomes addicted.
Biologically or
yes,
mentally?
Yes. A little bit of both for some people. But the initial is it's a physical. They feel a need for it more than other people who don't develop a dependency. But eventually it becomes a mental issue too. It becomes a routine that has to be broken, essentially.
So as far as a painkiller, mm-hmm. I think most of us are familiar with the Tylenols and the ibuprofens and the aspirins.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a continuum or are those totally different chemical compounds that the body will process or react to?
They are different. Opioids bind to the pain receptors, and what happens is your pain receptors get used to having that relief. And when you stop taking opioids and your pain receptors have developed a dependency, that's where the withdrawal comes in. Extreme illness, cravings, really a lack of ability to focus on anything but the need for that drug.
So is that the mental component of it? I mean, I would think pick a situation, pick a drug, so it's not this specifically, that if you have something that dulls the senses and then once that disappears, then the sense, whatever it is, comes back to full function. This sounds like it's a little bit different.
It's very physical in terms of it's not something you could mentally will away. Your body becomes dependent and you are sick if you don't have it. And that was somewhat surprising to me when I first started in this field, is I thought that people who were using heroin or people that are using painkillers, that there was a high involved. Initially, yes, but eventually the brain becomes so dependent on having that on the pain receptors that it just, if you don't have it on a regular basis, you will be ill and not able to function.
So the pain may actually be gone, or the initial trigger, but the body's systems are still needing this to function?
Exactly. And it's communicating to that person that it needs that drug by making that person sick. So a lot of people are out there continuing to use these drugs because if not, they're not functional. That's kind of a novel idea, but they're extremely sick. Their body becomes extremely sick without it. So it is this constant struggle of seeking the drug, having it so that you're not violently ill.
Is there a parallel to nicotine and stopping, you know, the smoking also?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know.
I've not used any of these things, but it sounds very comparable to the nicotine. And even like the gums and the patches and stuff are lower doses getting you, you know, weaning you off.
Right. Well, I could see that there's absolutely a parallel between that and what we provide. And that is medication to address those cravings so that you can start to mentally address the other issues that led into addiction. So like you said, with the Nicorette gum, we are offering medication that takes care of those initial cravings. But the second part really is the behavioral health and therapy to address and create coping mechanisms that go beyond the use of drugs.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Sarah Vogel from Aegis. Now, you guys are new to the community?
We have actually spent more than 2 years administering the hub and spoke grant in the area. And what that has done has...
Yes, you're new to the community.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've personally...
Del Nord and Booner, right?
Booner, yep, okay. Exactly, okay. Exactly.
You're going down the right path.
Sure. I've personally been here for 12 years, which still
makes
still
me
a
newcomer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Sarah, looking at the concept of opioid and opioid addiction, is heroin an opioid?
It is.
Okay, so that's just a different flavor or one that we may be more familiar with.
Right.
Over the years. What are some of the other opioids that people might recognize or drugs that might be recognized that maybe we don't recognize them, though, as an opioid?
Sure. Vicodin. You've heard the term Oxy. Those are two pretty prevalent. Percocet. There's a long list of them, but those are probably the most recognizable that are prescribed.
I can't believe that the medical profession was prescribing pain pills and prescriptions because they would somehow get financial remuneration. It just kind of runs counter to... it would be like somebody throwing a baseball game or throwing a basketball game, you know, for the odds. That just is so foreign to me. What started this tendency for prescriptions associated with this product? Was it the new greatest latest, and everybody started doing the prescribing of it before we knew? Was it us as patients saying, "Hey, give me something; it'll just take care of the pain, and I, you know, worry about whatever later"? Where did this prevalence of it come from?
It's multifaceted. It's all the things you mentioned. Doctors that I've spoken with said that in the last 20, 30 years that there was a concentration in their learning, in their in medical schools, to not leave pain unaddressed. And then pharmaceutical companies.
That pain wasn't a healthy indication. It was something to get rid of it all. However you can.
Essentially, that it was inhumane to leave people in pain and not address that. Pharmaceutical companies came in and said, we have something that's non-addictive that can treat pain. The problem is that it's not non-addictive for everyone. Some of us are predisposed to develop a dependency on that, on opioids. So now, it created a crisis for some.
We've also heard over the years that there are personalities that tend to have a higher likelihood for dependency.
Mm-hmm.
Take your pick, whatever flavor, doesn't matter. Dependency on something.
Right.
Does that manifest itself with this also? Or is this because it is the biological reaction also, it might not be, it's different?
Sure. Well, as we discussed over the break, people...
Oh, don't give up.
Oh,
that,
I know.
We talk about
I know.
The break.
We did
that's
talk
the, that's
the super
the secret part.
We talked a little bit about how adverse childhood experiences can contribute to someone developing a opioid or substance use disorder because they've been exposed to neglect and abuse through their childhood. Perhaps they watched one or both of their parents cope with life by using substances. So your history of childhood trauma can be an indicator of how likely you'll be to rely and become dependent on drugs, alcohol, tobacco, or other things that are addictive to self-treat that pain.
But this stuff is prescription only or illegal. So to get there, you're crossing certain thresholds. So that really does make it a little bit different, even though one is legal.
Right, right. And a lot of individuals started with a legal prescription, perhaps because they had an injury, and they started misusing the prescription, getting perhaps more from a friend, more off the street, because they're developing a tolerance and need more and more and more. And their body's telling them, you need more.
Still associated with the pain?
Pain receptors. Yes, because the pain receptors are used to it. And so...
But it's gone now beyond whatever the initial event was.
You're not only feeling pain, you're feeling like you're violently ill when you don't have it now.
So... If we get this prescription, we're going to be told what the potential impacts are, some of the warning signs, danger signs, things of that nature.
Sure.
Do we ignore that? Do we not communicate with our healthcare professionals properly? How do we get from, okay, this is what it was necessary for or perceived to be necessary for, to crossing the river, getting to the other side, and now it's a whole different scenario?
I would say for some people, it's hard to discuss the reality of what is happening, and they're not realizing what is happening until
paying attention?
No, until it becomes a major crisis. You think you're just taking a few extra pills or getting some from a friend, but before you know it, you're going through illegal means to do so, or you're...
But I would never think of asking you as a buddy, hey, you got any extra... You go back to your doctor, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand.
So I may not be out to lunch all the time. It's 8:30.
locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Sarah Vogel from Aegis, an outfit that is helping, I get what, 2 weeks? 2 months? When are you guys?
We are, construction has been done on our building, which is at 1st and V Street.
Wait, 1st and V. So you're down by Blue Ox?
Exactly. On the same block, right behind Humboldt Transit Authority.
Oh, you're down where the insurance guys used to be.
It used to be.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, the goofy red building down in the swamp.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. It's been beautifully renovated, and it'll be our treatment center. We are in the process of inspections and licensing, and we don't have a definite date. We're hoping for early May at this point.
Is this something that is, what do they call it when you get, it's not a recommendation, referral-based? Or can anybody come in if they have a situation or maybe a family member has a situation?
Absolutely. A patient could self-refer by giving me a call. I get calls from family members that want to have information about when we'll open, what services we'll provide. If you don't mind, I'll provide my phone number so that anyone who is interested on getting onto our waiting list and getting updates, periodic updates.
Waiting list because you haven't been told you can open the door yet?
Exactly. And this waiting list is helping us to know in those first few days and weeks how many doctors we need to have on hand. If we're going to be seeing 10 patients or 50 or 100, it's helping us to plan ahead so that we can meet that need.
Where do you come? Where does Aegis come from? Is this a regional? Is this the West Coast? Are you guys national, international? I mean, bringing in doctors is something I know a lot of other medical outlets would love to have that luxury.
Sure.
So when you say bringing in doctors, I'm normally thinking doctor shortage. You're going to be flying them in.
Sure. So luckily, we have a local doctor that we have already hired, Dr. Lois Jensen, who is working at other Aegis treatment centers right now while she's waiting for us to open. So we have our doctor. We also have other doctors from other treatment centers that can come and help us out those first few weeks or months when we have that first push of patient.
The tidal wave?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
What is the biggest stereotype that you run into or that people feel that they have to contend with if they are concerned they or a family member or a buddy are, I guess, hooked would be the, dependent would be the fancy word, hooked, that right. is going to be my word.
Right.
Hooked
right.
on either any of these opioids or on heroin.
There are a lot of negative names that come out when someone is addicted to a substance, and no one likes to be called names or be put into a box. Our patients are parents, teachers, daughters and sons. They have jobs and go to school and have lives outside of their addiction. And so, being singly identified as an addict or a junkie or something else that's stigmatizing is discouraging.
But is that a reality check also? I mean, if they can say, yes, I are one, isn't that kind of like a breakthrough moment or something that you guys and gals want to have occur so that they're dealing with reality?
Sure. And there's a difference between a patient themselves coming to that realization versus being stigmatized with that. Because it can turn into, going to the ER and not being properly treated because I just assume you're drug seeking because you've told me that you have an addiction. It can be being discriminated against for a job that you're very qualified and can perform, but because you've had this history or you currently struggle with this substance.
So preconceived notions.
It is. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now, I've been told that there are, and it sounds like you were saying pretty much the same thing, high-functioning addicts.
Absolutely.
With this. So does it impact? Does an opioid addiction impact anything else in the life? Or is it just this one aspect and you don't see some of the things like you do with meth or with marijuana or with some alcohol or some of these other things? Is this different because it is more of the natural stuff?
No, it's actually pretty ravaging because it consumes your life. Like we said, it's hard to be well without having the drug in your system. And so your life is revolved around obtaining it, whether that be legally through your doctor, illegally on the street, or from a friend. And then it can become where it's the most important thing, that you can neglect the other people, the other things in your life that are supposed to be important because this has become the number one in your life.
So it does become consuming.
It can, absolutely.
How long does it take somebody to get addicted?
You know, for some patients, they have said the first time they took it, they felt something different right away.
Good different?
A good different,
okay.
That they wanted to feel again. The problem is, and again, it's a misconception that you feel that good all the way through your addiction. It starts with that good feeling, and then it eventually becomes, I can't live without it because I can't feel well without it. And even feeling well.
So is that a lack of other things that make you feel good in your life?
It's a combination of that because you can come to the point where you've eliminated everything else in your life except having and obtaining this drug. So it becomes your single focus, but it's also biologically your focus because
right.
You're not finding a way to function without it physically.
The physical addiction component of this, Sarah, mm-hmm. Does it happen first time or does there need to be a certain amount in the system before?
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of things that make somebody feel good. Let's say a filet mignon.
Right.
As an example. Okay. You don't become physically addicted. I suppose you could. But you're probably not going to unless it's over a long period of time.
Correct.
And the same with alcohol.
You know,
I mean, there are some that kick quicker than others. But it's not a one and done kind of a thing. Can opioids be one time and you're hooked?
Yes. Yes. You eventually build up a tolerance. You use more and use more and use more and build up a tolerance. But yes, for some people, that first time is the absolute gateway.
That's it, and you're there.
Yes.
Now, wouldn't you recognize that it was? And that you had something was weird going on and then go and seek help? Unless you had the modeling from your upbringing or your buddies. I would think that would be a huge red flag, flare gun, warning signs.
Sure.
Danger Will Robinson, the whole nine yards, and say, okay, something's going on, and reach out to somebody.
Sure.
A medical professional.
And some people are able to catch it early on before it destroys everything in their life because they recognize something's starting to change. I'm not happy with the other things in my life. I'm now starting to concentrate on getting this. So they realize that early. So there's a full spectrum.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time, 8:48. Final couple minutes this morning with Sarah Vogel from Aegis. Sarah, if folks are interested in either finding out more about, and you know, opioids, again, it's one of those things that get thrown out there, and oh yeah, everybody can talk about it, but nobody knows what it is. Where do you go? Where do you find out? You know, if you're going in, if you're going to have a surgical procedure, if you are in a situation where you are using painkillers or think you might need to have, what are the options? I mean, how do you come up to speed with some of the choices that are out there so that either you recognize if you're starting to go down the trail and maybe you just want to have other alternatives? Where do you go to find that stuff?
You know, locally, I would recommend RX Safe Humboldt. They're our opioid safety coalition. They have a website, Facebook. They have resources for patients who are going into surgery and help them to know what the risks of opioids are and to discuss that with their doctor.
Will the doctors talk? Just, you know, I think I have a pretty good relationship with my guy and say, hey, Greg, da 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 da. And he would throw it back and say, you are a fool. Okay, yeah. And we would really be frank with the discussion. Is that something that's rare?
It depends on the doctor, the patient, what their relationship is. But patients should have the ability to ask their doctor, is there an alternative to me starting opioids for this issue?
And there is a legit role for opioids.
Yes, yes, absolutely. They can be used and prescribed responsibly.
Good deal. Yes. Well, welcome to the community.
Yeah.
12 years. Yeah, you'll get there. See everybody tomorrow.